With the sponsorship of the U.S. Embassy of the Republic of Azerbaijan and my partner Stala.com, I am heading out again to the South Caucasus, and this time into the critical conflict zone of Nagorno-Karabakh. As the Soviet Union failed in 1991, the former Soviet states of Azerbaijan and Armenia were tangled in an armed crisis over the fertile Azerbaijan region of Nagorno-Karabakh. It is 25 years since a ceasefire was signed, but there is no sturdy peace along the much-watched frontier. I will return to Baku to attend a meeting for the State Oil Fund of Azerbaijan that contributes greatly to the development of the Caucasus. With my colleague Christopher Nixon Cox, we will learn of the critical developments of the Southern Gas Corridor pipeline to link the Caspian Sea abundance to the energy needs of Europe. Join me as I explore both the perilous challenges and great opportunities of the South Caucasus, thanks to the U.S. Embassy of Azerbaijan and to my partner, Scala.com. Scala, a leading global digital technology company and proud sponsor of The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm speaking with Catherine Semser. She's a fellow at the Research Property Environmental Research Center in Bozeman, Montana, PERC. Her testimony to the U.S. Congress this past summer, pending the CECL Act, a move by Congress to ban or severely restrict trophy hunting in Africa, will have, we can reason, the opposite effect, because banning has led to the exploitation or the degradation of wildlife habitat, and that is the way wild creatures live. We go to a recent headline that Catherine brings to my attention. This is, "Hunter seeks to import parts of rare rhino he paid $400,000 to kill." This is a New York Times headline. The frame here is a scandal, but I believe that there's another way of looking at this. Catherine, the black rhino and I believe the white rhino are both spectacular creatures in Africa that are now and again on endangered species list. Does trophy hunting encourage or discourage the growth of these herds?
It's certainly encouraging the growth of these herds. Now, in the case of the black rhino, I think it's important for us to think that there are twice as many black rhino as there were 20 years ago. And trophy hunting has played a role in facilitating this recovery. Now, in the case of Namibia, the country is home to half of the world's southern black rhino population. And the recovery in Namibia and elsewhere is rooted in the incentives and anti-poaching, both of which trophy hunting has played a role in. Now, the black rhino is sort of a curious creature. As the males get older, they become significantly more aggressive. And as they pass reproductive maturity and are no longer able to contribute to the growth of the herd, that aggression continues to increase. So wildlife managers are left with the reality of that they need to remove these older rhino bulls from the population. And they can't translocate them because, given their behavior, that would just be moving the problem. And the problem is that their aggression typically results in them killing younger male rhinos who are of reproductive age, and sometimes even killing rhino calves. So keeping these post-reproductive males in the rhino population can actually hinder recovery efforts. I'm sorry?
No, the rhino that died, I learned from the news report, was 29 years old. I take it that that's a senior figure. I'm sympathetic, but that is old for a rhino, correct?
That is very old for a rhino, and he was past reproductive age and, again, had been limiting the ability of reproductive males to contribute to the rhino's recovery. So wildlife managers are faced with this issue of that they need to remove this rhino from the population. And the only way to do that, unfortunately, is to kill the animal. So they have a choice. They can either do it themselves, in which case they would be spending money, to cover salaries, to cover fuel, to cover the whole suite of expenses that go along with species conservation. Or they can sell the opportunity to shoot the rhino to an American or other interested hunter. And in the process, rather than spending money, raising several hundred thousand dollars for the conservation of the species. In the case of Namibia, most of that money will go into counter-poaching efforts. Now, this is an ideal situation. as much as it can be when the death of an animal is involved. You know, the IPBES and other authorities are always talking about we need more funding for conservation, we need more funding for conservation, and that's certainly true. And through their black rhino conservation and hunting program, the Namibians seem to have hacked, you know, how to achieve that. They solve one of the problems that they have with recovery, the presence of an aggressive male that's preying on younger males, and they also bring in revenues to support the recovery program whilst conversations, you know, are around trophy hunting. There is a lot of nuance and a lot of detail that doesn't always necessarily translate into headlines, but countries like Namibia are doing the best they can with what they have, and in the case of the black rhino, they're doing a spectacular job. Again, there's twice as many today as there were 20 years ago.
Let's go to another country in the news for the opposite reason. There was a lion named Cecil who was killed by a dentist from Michigan, but I learned from you that Zimbabwe is one of the countries that permits trophy hunting and that it has a program called Campfire that you find a good model. What is Campfire?
So the Campfire program stands for Communal Areas Management Program for Indigenous Resources. And this is a program that was set up with the cooperation of the United States through USAID several decades ago. And under the Campfire program, areas are divided into what are known as communal areas, or I should say land is divided into what are known as communal areas. And in these communal areas, rural people have use rights to the wildlife that are found there. And they can either use those rights to bring in food for themselves by hunting those animals, or what's more common is they will lease those rights to a hunting outfitter. And when they lease those rights to the hunting outfitter, they get two benefits. The first is there's a cost share. As I mentioned earlier, the communities get roughly 50% of the revenues brought in by trophy hunting, and that's increased household incomes by as much as 25%. But they also get the meat from the animals that are harvested. They're increasing their food security, and they're also raising the cash necessary to build schools, to build clinics, to generally increase their standard of living in a country that is still, unfortunately, desperately poor. Because they're receiving these benefits from these animals and from the habitat that those animals depend on, they've got an economic incentive to maintain those wildlands as they are, to tolerate large populations of elephants and lions and other species that present a risk to life and limb, and to promote conservation. And it's worked very, very well. You know, Zimbabwe today has the second largest elephant population in Africa, and it's more than doubled from where it was several decades ago, and it's all because of these financial incentives that have encouraged conservation in the country.
Another country of success, South Africa. This is the white rhino, as distinct from the black rhino, you can tell, because it has private lands where there's a great deal of money, I think the number is $1.6 billion of income, by managing wildlife in the neighboring countryside. And that would seem to be, Catherine, you make this case to the rest of Africa. Why doesn't Kenya pay attention? Good heavens, this is hard numbers here. Kenya could use the income.
And I think that the government of Kenya is beginning to understand that. You know, there was recently a group of experts that was convened by the government looking at how could the country better integrate the consumptive use of wildlife, the sustainable use of wildlife, into its conservation programs. You know, the country of Kenya is seeing wildlife migrations, you know, collapse across the landscape. You know, some species are down as much as 66%, you know, in terms of total population. So they recognize that they're at a crisis point. And so they've convened experts to look at how consumptive use can be integrated into their conservation programs. Those experts have submitted their recommendations to the government, and everyone is waiting to see what the government will ultimately decide. I think, you know, one bright spot that we're seeing in Kenya is the development of the conservancy movement. And much like the Campfire program, you know, this is a movement that grants limited rights in wildlife to rural communities and encourages them to be entrepreneurial and to figure out ways where the wildlife, is an economic benefit rather than a liability to their livelihoods. And we're seeing this movement, steadily grow across the landscape, and hopefully it will provide the kind of balance that the country needs so that it can develop economically and be the middle-income country that it's striving to be, but at the same time maintaining the health of the ecosystems whose services are essential to helping it realize its development goals.
Quickly, Catherine, the CECL Act, as written, you conclude in your testimony, will fail. 70% of the global market for hunting trophies is in the United States, and the Congress is going in the wrong direction. Is that correct? We have about 30 seconds.
That is absolutely correct. Without the United States market being open to African countries, we will see a massive collapse of conservation programs across the African continent.
Catherine Semser, a fellow, research fellow at the Property and Environmental Research Center, testifying before Congress summer of 2019, pending the CECL Act, which will go in the opposite direction from success for Africa and for the wildlife habitats and the beautiful creatures those habitats create. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.